Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A.D. Edwards. How are you doing this morning, Mr. Edwards?
We're doing fine. We have some delegation from our outlets in England and Manchester, that beautiful voice that we hear every Saturday, the Ronnie and Donnie program coming to us from Manchester, England, if you will. Delegation here to examine the problems here in our beloved Shangri-La. You know, all this violence and the stuff. Did we have any shootings last night? Did they shoot up downtown again, or what? Did we get by at least one night without killings, homicides, brutality, and et cetera, or do we know?
Don't know yet. The paper did not reflect anything of that nature at this point, but, you know, we never know. You know, the petty robberies and things that don't go reported happen all the time in downtown Minneapolis, of course. So, no, we didn't get much of anything in the paper this morning in regards to what's happening in downtown Minneapolis.
Let me do this, Donald, on behalf of our worldwide audience, if you will. Let me give an update. We have to take on the role of the big, powerful Star Tribune. There has been an arrest in the days in the death of Monique Bela, if you will. A very precious African-American woman, mother of two, abducted, kidnapped, put in a U-Haul van, if you will, tortured. Yes, Don, it's terrible. Tortured and then shot and killed, shot three times, if you will, and killed and body dumped. WCCO made an interesting observation last night. I was really saddened by their absence of due diligence. They said, what was she doing in an alley in North Minneapolis? And I thought, wow, because that's where her body was left. I mean, you know, she didn't walk down to Xerxes Avenue, 1300 block. By the way, there are a lot of folks that happen to live on that block down that you and I know them and have seen in the community. In fact, at least one of them was at the big meeting with the mayor. Now, the mayor brought him in and said that he was going to do some things. But let me complete the update. There is a African-American, 41-year-old African-American, last name Barry. The reason I kept asking you about what the big, powerful Star Tribune had said, but I guess unless it's a blonde-headed white woman, I mean, we, you know, It's not relevant, but Barry is and has been in jail for 2 days. Actually, he was in jail when the leaders were at City Hall yesterday with the little mayor, Jacob Fry Fry, and that's his new nickname, and the new Sherlock Holmes Investigative Brigade. I gave them the label of the Sherlock Holmes Investigative Group. But a person had already been apprehended, and authorities are looking for some additional people. They are indicating that they can't share that information at this point with the community. Do you know the police are saying that there are leaks in the African-American community with regards to apprehending individuals who are killing mothers of small babies and et cetera? Yes. But anyways, there's a person in custody. His name is Barry. 41 years old, if you will, long criminal record. He and other associates carried out the kidnapping. You mean to tell me, Don, in this morning's paper, there was no emphasis placed on the fact that this young lady, 28 years old, employed by one of the largest realty companies here in the Twin Cities, you mean that they did not talk in terms of the dynamics that she suffered through in the last hours of her life, Don? Is that what you're saying to me?
Well, not at all, Mr. Edwards, other than, you know, yesterday they mentioned a little bit about them capturing this 41-year-old gentleman that, you know, allegedly, abducted her, but no accomplice. And So that's basically it. But it's not even in the Star Tribune, it's not even one of the top five looked at or read stories. And again, that's the stigma of Minnesota and Minnesota Nice. You really can't depend on this liberal state to attack and address issues concerning the black body. You know, and this just reminds me, I was listening to a show last week, Mr. Edwards, our local public radio station, KMOJ, where some brothers just came out with really some strong words against that system that looks out for everything but the black American. And again, here from the Drake Hotel all the way to these murders, these in South and North Minneapolis and in St. Paul, like I don't see a very proactive, it's more of a reactive response. And oh yeah, we feel bad. And I don't know, Ms. Edwards, did you see the interview with Mayor Fry on Fox 9 when he was talking about the people of the Drake and how sad he was walking on the buses and how bad he felt? And I'm like, oh, yes. My goodness.
God, I saw that, Donald, and one of the things I was troubled by, and we talked about it, no one challenged us, though I know that they would say that we were being toxic, but there was no challenge to the headline by the big, powerful Minneapolis Star Tribune about the refugees. They identified all of those poor people and people who are trying to maintain their lives. They identified them as refugees. Probably 90% of the people that were burned out of the Drake Hotel are, you know, natural-born American citizens. I couldn't understand. I thought maybe over the week between last Saturday and this morning here in the Twin Cities that some of the leadership, the intellectual greats, would speak out about identifying these people and the children as refugees. I didn't quite understand it, but I was basically told that, you know, media, you know, the electronic media, print media, whatever it is, they can say whatever they want to say about the sons and daughters of the African, if you will. And so those people at the Francis Drake, by the way, it was on this program last Saturday on the Don and Ron program that we said that the mayor and city representatives were lying about the fact that they were going to try to preserve, I use the word preserve, the Francis Drake, at least the west side of the Francis Drake, for future housing. And that was untrue. The entire structure is being torn out. And, in fact, the permits for the construction of a beautiful new at least 25 to 30-story condo right there as you come into Minneapolis from the airport, et cetera, there on the big highway, is that they will not be, there will be no poor people like the ones that lost their, living quarters and et cetera at the Francis Drake, now a name of the past. There will be no, quote-unquote, poor people's housing in that area, Mr. Allen.
Oh, no, not at all. Now, that whole block there, you know, Mr. Edwards, I was talking to a developer the other day, and he was telling me, they said, you know, the city of Minneapolis really wants something nice when you drive in down 35W coming from the airport into Minneapolis that signifies, you know, welcome to Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, some nice five-star condo, hotel, mixed-use property.
Yes, yes.
You know,
yes.
$1,500 to $5,000 a square foot, you know, something really beautiful there. And, of course, you know, but what bothers me, Mr. Edwards, in the case of the Francis Drake Hotel fire, is that the Minneapolis Foundation is collecting a lot of money, but yet their website and Joanne Stately, who's kind of their face of this and the fundraising, has said that, well, we can't give money directly to the victims. And also,
wow,
we heard that in 2011 with the North Minneapolis tornado.
Tornado.
I'm looking, I'm seeing these different agencies in North Minneapolis and in South Minneapolis getting $25,000 here, $25,000 there. And I'm wondering what the process is to make sure these people, because like you said, Mr. Edwards, they were 90% Black American born folk. Now, I hate to say this, but I just have to tell the truth. If these people were Somalian, Nigerian, Liberian, Ethiopian, they would have found them houses immediately.
Okay. They would have put them in the big tower that had the most recent fire before the Francis Drake, that big building that Black Americans couldn't even get into. But anyways, don't want to start anything. We certainly don't want to be toxic, if you will. But it's just factual. Now, let's also report this, because apparently that article was not in the paper this morning either, the big, powerful Minneapolis Star Tribune. There was some kind of public hearing yesterday at 1 p.m. That was a couple hours after the leaders met to talk in terms of the increase of, Black folks, particularly Black women, being murdered in Minneapolis. And so a number of people who had been residents at the Francis Drake Hotel, now gone, if you will, were talking in terms of how the Minneapolis Foundation, big, powerful foundation, headed up by a former, quote-unquote, mayor by the name of R.T. Rybak and his assistant, African-American woman, a powerful, powerful, powerful woman, by the name of Smith Baker, or Baker Smith, or whatever, that they were not allowing any input from the victims, or as they are now being identified, the refugees, if you will. It's like maybe the folks don't have a command of the English language, or they can't read. But anyways, it got kind of emotional at City Hall yesterday at between 1 and 1:30. I don't know if the mayor had time to stop and hear that, because, he was on the run meeting with, his Jewish compadres who are concerned about some of the violence and a reduction in business in that area in North Minneapolis along Broadway and Lindale and back to North 6th Street and up to Penn Avenue and et cetera, that they want a plan to deal with the Negro problem. Oopsie daisy, we weren't supposed to say that, were we, Don? The Negro problem there in North Minneapolis, if you will. And so there was this hearing, and it became very emotional at City Hall yesterday at 1 o'clock. From those that were the victims. I guess I'm supposed to identify them as refugees, but I'll continue to identify them as the victims. Because I don't know really where there's going to be any housing, livable housing, affordable housing for these people that were the former tenants of the Francis Drake Hotel and et cetera. So we just need to update, and as we said, updating on the death of Monique, a African-American mother of two, kidnapped. You mean to say, I have to ask you again a question, Mr. Allen, because I had not picked up a copy of this morning's paper. You're saying that there was no highlighting, if you will, detail, that this African-American mother of two babies, a hardworking real estate agent from one of the largest white real estate companies in the state of Minnesota, you mean they did not explain all of the circumstances which allowed the local white television stations to ask the question, what was the Black woman doing in an alley in North Minneapolis? You're kidding me, Don, aren't you?
No. There's no detail explanation and at all whatsoever, Mr. Edwards. But that press conference at City Hall, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Fry was in the backdrop. He did say a few things. I didn't clip that out because I could care less what he said. But I do have a short clip from Spike Moss, who was down there. With Al Flowers, Sharif Willis, and Thomas Berry, and a group of other gentlemen. So.
Oh, okay. They made statements. That was at the 10 o'clock press conference on dealing with the violence and the deaths of people of color, particularly African-American women being killed on Thanksgiving and New Year's and et cetera in our beloved city. Oh, okay, well, if you would, let us hear what the leadership was saying.
Okay, and this is Spike Moss.
That's how we are treated. And we understand that kind of hate and racism. You can't be in the top three worst states towards people of color and you're not full of hate. You can't be. And we challenge this hate. That's the big problem in front of these young people. We got to challenge the same hate that's taught to our children and that's our behavior. The same school system that taught them not to love themselves. The same movies that taught them not to love themselves. And now they're finally there, calling themselves the N-word, calling their women B's and H's. We got to reverse all of that together collectively. And I'm saying also to you young people, don't leave each other. This is your struggle. This is your battle. Brother Sharif is the only one that's been here almost as long as me fighting, or has been here as long as I've been fighting. If you got enough breath in you, Sharif, to go one more time, you go one more time. Or if you got enough breath, you go one more time. And make sure these young people understand what you're faced with, what you got to do, and help you do it. And as long as you give us respect, we're going to give you respect. But the bottom line I'm trying to say right now, we are demanding our fair share. You ain't got to give us nothing. Give us our fair share of city tax. Give us our fair share of state tax. Why does Spike Moss say that? Because the white coalition in city hall and councils and senate, they vote for what they want for the white majority, and they vote against everything we ask for. Every year, we have not even $1 million that we ask for out of $4 billion. Let's end that and use this death to end it. And let me make myself clear to the media, because I don't want you to get stuck on this one woman. I'm stuck on the children we lost in their own homes. I'm stuck on the children whose blood was running face down in the streets, rivers of blood for generations. I'm stuck on the children who have no parents because they're addicted to drugs. Crime in itself, I'm stuck on. And what Al is saying, he has my total support to do what he's doing to so do these young people. But I don't want you to think we don't know what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with the ultimate level of racism. You can walk around our community for 9 months and can't find a job, but 9 minutes you find a gun and we ain't even got a gun factory. You can walk around for 9 months, huh, looking for some money to go to college and can't find it. For 9 minutes you can find a dope bag, because that's the conspiracy that's dumped on my people. And we got to understand, get out of the conspiracy. Free your mind, you're behind a follower. Free your mind, you're behind a follower. And y'all stick with this.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, that was the clip of a piece of the press conference in downtown Minneapolis, and that was Mr. Spike Moss. Mr. Edwards, Spike Moss said something pretty interesting there, that he's been in the game or down there, or been around the longest. And he mentioned 1968. I think he was about 15 then. Mr. Edwards, how far does your history go back in this this battle for justice, civil rights, and a fair playing field?
Oh, well, I became a quote-unquote an activist, speaking out essentially in 1958, decade, 10 years before. But there were many African-American leaders long, long before I was even born, if you will. I was born in 1939, and so there were many, such as the beloved Nellie Stone Johnson, if you will, Cecil Newman, Bill Craddock. People don't even know and remember the name of Bill Craddock, the powerful president in the 1930s and early 40s, just before the beginning of the Second World War. Bill Craddock, president of the NAACP. In fact, was the NAACP president, was she there along with the, I know that the president of the Urban League of Minneapolis was there. I saw him on the videos that have been posted. But we need to be careful about how long we've been on the battlefield, if you will, because they're particularly here, maybe if we were living up in War Road, Minnesota, and had just moved up there, we could say we were the first. But, the sons and daughters of the African American have been battling for a long, long time. And, I just want to kind of get some of those names in. So to your question, don't want to create unnecessary back and forth, if you will. But there have been great African Americans, Negroes, as we were referred to in the 1900s and even before, who were fighting battles. And by the way, the bloodshed is not new. It's just percentage-wise, it's just more frightening, if you will. But I can remember as a youngster coming up, if we had two African Americans killed in the community within a calendar year, we would be in a state of shock. Black leaders, Negro leaders would be out there, and community would be dialoguing and finding out what has happened. We've lost that sense of direction, Mr. Allen, and folks maintain, I don't know, a different approach, a different philosophy, a monologue or whatever you want to call it. But there have been a lot of black folks that were out there long before a old Negro like myself came along. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And be 81 years of age, next week. But go ahead.
I'm encouraging. There's some people. I had asked Al Flowers to call this morning, and hopefully he does. Our call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904 if you have comments, suggestions, or want to challenge us. But, you know, I'm looking at this. I watched the whole press conference taped by Mr. K.G. Wilson, who does a great job. And it seemed to me that the ask on the table was for some funding.
Okay.
Rightly so. Rightly so, by the way. But it seems that the Urban League, led by Mr. Belton, is not being funded at levels that it has been accustomed to for the 15 years you were there and after, Mr. Edwards, when Mr. Hightower was there. And I guess there's like 20 people that might work there full time, and they
not so. The Urban League employment team, the folks that you see of those numbers that now occupy the offices that the former 5th Congressional District leadership used to occupy, those offices are now occupied by Asians. Asians occupy those offices there in the Urban League.
Mm-hmm. I think the call we were waiting on, and I would like to bring the caller. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Who's calling?
This is Thomas Berry. You told me to call in.
Yes. And Thomas, you were, Mr. Edwards, this is Thomas Berry, who was on our local community radio station last Sunday. And if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Berry, you were down at the press conference yesterday, correct?
Correct.
Okay. What are your thoughts? I mean, what's going on? What's the real McCoy? Because I know you like to keep it real. And you were on Blog Talk Radio, so you can pretty much say what you need to. But what is your opinion about what?
Well, the first thing I want to do is offer condolences to the Ball and Williams family. I was made aware after the press conference that my brother, Cedric Berry, is the one who was arrested for the murder of the young lady. I didn't know that. Very devastated about it. But I stand with my statements. If it's my brother, cousin, mother, whomever, who kills anyone not from our community, they need to be prosecuted. If they haven't done it, then they need to be set free. And I stand by that. I believe that
Let me say this to you. This is Art Edwards. You're to be commended because tragically it appears that a member of your family is being held in custody, but normally people would try to skirt that. So you are clearly a man of strength by indicating that this is what had happened. You certainly were not aware at the press conference yesterday at 10 in the morning that a gentleman by the name of Berry, last name Berry, had been, in fact, taken into custody about 12, 14 hours earlier. But I commend you for accepting responsibility for making sure the information is made available to the community. But back to the question by my colleague, what was your take? Because I was watching the mayor of the city. He seemed to be rather indifferent. Maybe I'm being toxic or negative. He seemed to be kind of indifferent on what many of you were saying. at that press conference. But give me your take, because you were there, if you would, sir.
Well, I think that we're going to always have that struggle with people who feel like they're from another minority class outside of being African-American. I feel like they always look at their struggle before they look at ours, and he's from a different minority group. He doesn't feel like our ancestors suffered more than his. So I know that he says he invested a lot of personal time and effort into things. And in our private meeting, he was given some, we gave him something to do, and we're looking for by Martin Luther King holiday for him to respond to what the city is going to do about this situation. Let me make this clear. No matter how much money that I've heard anybody throw around, the main question no one has ever asked the mayor or the governor is simply, how much are they willing to invest in the stopping of black on black crime? Not how much money we want. How much are they willing to invest? Because a lot of times we go in as a people and we ask for dollars, and we're asking for chump change, to be honest with you. And that's why nothing gets done. And a lot of times when we ask for the chump change, what happens is they're willing to bargain you down out of the chump change. You go in asking for $500,000, at least $50,000. And then you've made promises to people that you're going to get things done. You can't get nothing done with $50,000 for a $500 million issue. Even $500,000 ain't going to work. And I believe that we have to start really, really going to the core. So talking to the mayor, he did seem indifferent, but listening to your show, I didn't know that the Drake Hotel, that they were doing a press conference about that later. So it seems like the city has
1 o'clock. They did that at 1 o'clock after y'all left. Folks from the Francis Drake turned out and really read the riot act to them. I was kind of disappointed and raised that question to my colleague, Mr. Allen, and that there was no real in-depth story in this morning's edition of a big, powerful white newspaper, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, about what was said by many of the former residents, not refugees, as they were referred to last Saturday. But I cut you off there, sir. Go ahead. Continue your reflections on the press conference yesterday and the history that you have knowledge of, because you are one of the principal people that has been talking about the importance of reparations. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir, because I feel like a lot of what we need to have stopping is the repetitiveness of legislation, laws that are keeping us in these positions where we're being locked out. A lot of these things that are happening where they are giving other immigrant groups money. You know, it's a lot of bragging going on about black girl magic, and what I've stated on the radio, and it's fact. Is that is not African-American women who are creating these businesses. These are East African women who are doing it, and most of them are married to them. We have to be honest about what's going on. Because somebody called themselves black don't mean they're black like we're black. Doesn't mean that they have the same experience, and it doesn't mean that they are aligned with us politically. And these are the type of things we don't understand. And when I'm saying that, I'm not saying that to be indifference to these other groups. I'm saying that to say to us, we have to stop faking. We have to stop acting like we're doing something and deal with the reality. We have to stop giving money to people who are literally just going to galas on vacations and everything else, and they're not doing anything with any money that they're giving for these opportunities to serve our people. They're literally not servicing the people. And when we talk about the Monique Balls and we talk about these murders, you know, like I know, Mr. Edwards, there's going to be plenty of people lining up around corners to get dollars. But you know, like I know, that those people who are lining up, they're just going to grab the cash and money, the bag of money, and they're going to run. We have, as a community, we have to change that as well. We need to hold people accountable.
Let me cut in on you just for a minute, Mr. Barrett, because you are touching on some points that need to be touched on. What is, in the best of your knowledge at this point, what is the situation with the savings and loan operation that we were all being told was on its way and was in place, and that black folks, and this was 5 to 6 months ago. Can you kind of give us an update? I've heard you make some references to it on Mr. Flowers' program. Could you just update our worldwide listening audience? So what has happened with the people's savings and loan? Do you know? Are you in a position to articulate or speak to it?
Mm-hmm. All I know is I was at a meeting where they explained that the former director of the bank fell in love with a gentleman They started to misappropriate the funds.
A white man. This is a black program. Let's be upfront.
Okay.
Yeah, she fell in love with a white man. Right.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, she fell in with all this black girl magic. She fell in love with a white guy. Because if you start noticing what this magic is about, it's about eliminating black men at the table. That's what the magic is about. That's the ta-da or the trick. Ta-da. Yeah. You see, I don't want to be with a man. I'll be with a woman. Ta-da. See, I don't even want to. If I want to, I don't want to just like you. That's the ta-da. So that is exactly what we're talking about here with this magic. And what magically disappeared was the opportunity for our community to be able to get resources. And come to find out that everybody that was sitting at the table, it was the white man who had the most experience with financial background. So he was able to swindle everybody. So that's what's going on with that. It's on a hold, but no one wants to talk about that. And like I stated before, if it was any brother who had done this with a white woman, they would have never let this go. Same thing with that congresswoman. If it was a black man that was married to his sister that cheated with his white staffer, they would never let that go. And this is a part of that moral decay in our community that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, sir. I cut you off on your initial train of thought. How do you want to wrap it up, Book? Because we were asking you, appreciate you calling in about, you know, the mayor. What is the mayor's plan to deal with this violence?
Brother, the mayor doesn't have a plan, and we're asking him to at least listen to the coalition of people with Safe Streets so that he can actually allow the people who are on the ground to have a seat at the table. GVI is only getting $400,000 a year. That's not enough, and they're not really dealing with gun violence intervention. It's more about domestic violence intervention. We need more. They said the other part of the money that they're putting on violence prevention is also in affordable housing. Well, you know that affordable housing goes to everyone. It doesn't just go to our community. So we need some targeted resources for us so we can deal with our issue. And, you know, let's keep this in mind while I close out. The state has gotten caught with their hands in a cookie jar, giving the Native Americans over $46 million in funds, as well as misappropriating over hundreds of millions of dollars. This state, as well as this city and these counties, they have money that they can give and direct directly to us. We just have to stand up and demand it. And then we also need to make sure that the well-speaking Negroes who don't mean us no well or mean us any good, we need to make sure we push them out the way and call them on the carpet anytime they get in line to get anything.
Last year, 2019, a mini census count said there was about an estimated 340,000 black folks in Minnesota. Let's take, say, 150,000 under 18. Let's just do that. I don't have numbers right in front of me. I just going on something that I read a couple of weeks ago. What is the problem? What are the challenges of us asking those 250,000 adults, maybe 200,000 working full time, maybe, for $1 a month for 12 months. That would bring in the community private funds of over $20 million a year.
Right.
How do we start the process and fund our own stuff instead of begging the master, which is what we've been doing for a long time? Even though the funds are there, they're supposed to be distributed equally, but we have challenges at every level of society for the black body, the black man and woman, from education to housing to economics, jobs, et cetera.
Right.
What is stopping that, or why has not that not been a process put into effect to build our own wealth and do what we want to do instead of being at the rope and the chain of the master?
Well, you know better, Don.
Let me cut in on that, and not to cut you off, Brother Barry, but the history is always important, and I hear you talk about that oftentimes on KMOJ.
Yes,
in 2011, a young man at that time by the name of Booker Hodges, now Assistant Commissioner for Public Safety in our beloved state of Minnesota, wrote an ed-op piece in the then Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, which is a paper kind of dying now. But he wrote a story. He talked about in 1993 and 1994, that over $20 million was serviced into the African-American community, $20 million. And Mr. Hodges did really a nice job of his research and analyzing this. Now, this was in 2011, and the reason I interrupted, gentlemen, is that a tremendous amount of money in my lifetime, particularly after the disturbances of the 1960s, have been poured into North Minneapolis, the African-American community on both sides of the city, and et cetera. And yet, the younger individuals such as Mr. Berry and others have raised the question about where, when, what happened to the money, like you know, the construction palace there on Plymouth Avenue and Penn, which no longer is controlled by the African-American community. And people accuse us of being toxic and just stirring, you know, manure up, if you will. They use the other term, starts with S. But my question is, at what point are people going to be accountable for all of that money that has been poured in to the African-American community since, let's say, 1985? Could either one of you gentlemen kind of help me understand that I'm an older African?
Yeah, before I let Mr. Thomas finish, just answer the rest of it, because I know he has something to say. But from the date you said to 2000, either 15 or 17, in North Minneapolis alone, Mr. Edwards, there's been $400 billion pumped through there through different funding from a variety of sources. But yet the area looks the same. The nonprofits, 250-plus nonprofits in that geographical area, 1 mile away from the Urban League. But yet over 91% of the people that use North Point are over 100% under the federal poverty line. So there's no policy. There's nothing being done. And someone like Mr. Berry says, there's some stratified Negroes that are taking nice vacations and buying big cars and not doing a damn thing for the community. But go ahead, Mr. Thomas. Go ahead, close it out.
Well, you know what I would say, what you guys, when you see that money coming into the community, the first thing you have to ask is that money set up to sustain families or is that set up to sustain individuals? And when I say that, I deeply mean that families typically will take an investment like that and use it wisely, while the individual will do selfish things and waste it and put it back into the hands of the people that gave it to them. We have a community that is hooked on foundation dollars, and you can give us all the money you want to give us, but at the end of the day, we definitely need to be thinking about industries that we can create our own, as Don was talking about, instead of begging. We need to create industries of our own. It doesn't make sense that in this state we have over 14,000 foster parents who are Caucasian and we only have 900 that are African Americans. Meanwhile, these white families are getting up to $2,500 per child for foster care. And while you're looking at some of these people who are coming back committing crimes in our community, we can link them back to the foster care system and also prison. They typically go, it's not school to prison pipeline, it's school, foster care, prison pipeline. That's how the pipeline works. So if we were just divesting our energy and those funds into things that would be sustainable for community, and I think that the credit union, if it would have been set up properly, brothers, I believe that should have been able to help generate some income so that we can start getting business loans in our community so we can own some of the corner stores in our community.
Let me say this in closing as you depart us. That was the dream of Negro entrepreneurs, businessmen, and et cetera in 1936. I mean, I know people get tired of hearing, you know, Ron Edwards talking that old stuff about history. We don't need to know that. And, of course, you know, if you don't know where you've been, you sure in hell don't know you're getting ready to walk off the cliff. But in 1937, for all these naysayers out here, the African-American community opened its first savings and loan there on 38th and 4th Avenue. And for anybody that questions or doubts us, Mr. Berry, there is a book from the what is called the Scott Collection. In fact, it's on display at the Minneapolis Public Library. Beautiful book.
I have one.
Oh, there you go. And I think then you've seen that I think it's on page 50-something or so for the Negro Savings and Loan entity that served this community well from 1937 to 1952-53 when the white folks started indicating that they would accept our deposits and even consider giving us loans for business development and et cetera. So for those folks that said that this was something new with the latest rendition, if you will, of the loan companies and et cetera, our community, our leadership, now gone and deceased, but great black men and women, put together a savings and loan operation that functioned for many years, helping the African American or Negro community, as we were called, grow by leaps and bounds. In fact, it was one of the things that helped get us through the Depression. Mr. Berry, appreciate you taking the time to call in and exchange information and kind of give us additional background on the history of the African American. Because some people don't think, we have any history here.
Can I say this real quick about the
murder? Go right ahead.
They're not telling you guys is that the young lady's boyfriend, I found out last night, there's a $250,000 hit that's on that young man. And
yes,
what we're not
is.
Talking
yes.
about a lot of these murders that's going on inside of Minneapolis, it is a lot of hits that are being put on, and this is Chicago-style shootings that are going on. So people are putting $5,000 on up to kill other people. So this is something else that I don't hear people talking about in the community. I don't even hear the police talking about it. So a lot of this is just drug hits that are going on. So my condolences to her family once again, directly from my family. We're all devastated by it. And, you know, if my brother's guilty, all of us have all said the same thing, including my mother. We can't stand all by right. anyone, anybody.
All right. Appreciate your candor and your honesty, Mr. Berry. And the best to you and your family. Take care. All right.
Thank you,
Mr. Allen, anything on the phone line?
Yeah, we have another call. Our producers say this might be Twin Cities activist, Mr. Al Flowers. Is this you, Mr. Flowers?
Yes, it is. Hey, what's going on, Ron?
Yeah, what's going on, Alphonse? What you got? Go ahead, Mr. Allen. You've been talking with Mr. Flowers. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to cut right to the chase. What's going on with the city of Minneapolis and the Urban League, and why aren't they funding the Urban League? And a second question is, why is Emerge getting all this pass-out money? Just got a phone call from a couple folks. And it's not going to the Urban League. Is there a problem there we should know about that we need to address?
No, I ain't going to get into, I know what's happening right now. And in y'all conversation earlier about how much money coming in to the north side, and I just like to throw the question out there. It ain't coming to us. You know, it's not coming to us. And I think when we say that, when we say it, people be thinking we got all the resources when they I'm on the phone. When that money is being passed out, that we're not getting it. And then, so when you talk about what we did yesterday and what we're trying to do is say we want to be held accountable, and we don't have that many institutions in Minnesota, and particularly in Minneapolis, we ain't got nothing else. I know we jump on our Urban League, but Where else can we get reached? They don't give them nothing now. And Ron knows that ever since Archie Ryback. Archie Ryback is the one that started the demise when Clarence Hightower was there.
Yes, yes, because R.T. Ryback is the mayor that made the statement that when he was elected, the purpose of his election was to change the face of black leadership in Minneapolis. Yes,
yeah.
Yes, yeah. I've talked about that quite a bit. People said I was being toxic and nobody should listen to an old fool. But, yeah, appreciate it. Well, Mr. Flowers, what was your take? Let me continue the chase, if you will. What was your take on the press conference yesterday? And I had the feeling as I watched the videos and et cetera live stream by K.G. Wilson, I had the feeling that the mayor was really uncomfortable. In fact, he was standing right next to you. I had the feeling that he was uncomfortable. He didn't feel at home with his black constituents. Is he somewhat shy? Give me your take, Mr. Flowers, in just a couple minutes, because we got some other calls holding. I mean, what was your take on the mayor's disposition?
Well, I think, Ms. Elwood, that he'd never seen us come down as a unit, African American descendants of the slave. Because that's what I'm saying now, because we got some kind of way, you know, we done changed our name several times from the N-word to Negro to African-American to color people. And so now I think we ADOS, Mr. Edward, African-American descendant of the slave, because that's the only way everybody is using our data to say what the disparities are. But then when they get it took care of, they don't we're not included. And then people like Mayor Fryer and them, they use, different activists to play like they're speaking for the African-American community that don't, and a lot of them don't respect the history that a person like yourself or Ms. Edwards or Spike Moss or Josie Johnson, they don't respect that history because they were coming out talking about, and I'm talking about Nakima and them, all of them, that Nakima, Jason Soul, all these people that were talking about other people. Remember, they were talking about the young preachers was coming, all of those people that don't respect our elders, and that's what caused us a few problems over the past couple of years. So he didn't have them to, because I said, we right here, right now, because I've been working with the churches, everybody, I'm saying, no, let's all come together. And then they can't tell us who can work in our community, because right now they saying they dictate who can work in our community. So, yeah, I think the mayor was uncomfortable because he never seen us come together. And I'm challenging anybody that if you out there doing working on issues, then bring it out to the forefront. That's where the accountability will come. So,
okay.
But if you don't respect the reason the other groups are having a hard time, and again, I say like Nakima and them, is because they are now they down at the Drake Hotel. They're gonna try to pimp the Drake Hotel thing about what those people are going through. Now they play like they like them, but and the people don't know. They just trying to see what they gonna get out of it.
Yeah, federal
system
like that.
They will get something out of it because they're going to go down there and I hate to say it, but play the Me Too card and go in there and, you know, for the mothers and the children. And the city is very comfortable with these people. And
right.
Like you said, you're absolutely right. Didn't anyone give a damn or rat ass about the people in the Drake Hotel until this fire? Because if they
right.
did, there wouldn't be no black Americans in the Drake Hotel, period.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right, Don. That's what we got to do. My thing is about, it's a real thing about them not knowing our history or the history of Minnesota, period. And most of these people, the parachuted in, and they collected a lot of money. I'm telling you, you know, a lot of it is they using the criminal justice system. So they want the felons, the convicts to run the asylum. They tell them, you know, that's what they're focused on. So we want criminal justice reform, but their criminal justice reform, they want them to be the speakers for us. That's why they jump over our elders and we just think that just ain't going to happen. That just ain't going to happen.
And
I'm hoping in 2020.
My observation, Mr. Flowers, was correct. that the mayor, Jacob Fry, was extremely uncomfortable at the 10 o'clock meeting, and it got worse as it pertains to the meeting at 1 o'clock about what they were going to do for all the refugees. I'm not understanding how people born and raised in the United States of America become refugees. But anyways, appreciate you taking the time to call. Mr. Flowers, we know you'll be talking about this on your program. And I can only speak for myself per se, I thought that Mr. Berry was a very honest young man, but I think he laid out some heavy facts, as you've done at this particular hour, with regards to what is really happening. And Booker T. Hodges, who I know you know, wrote a piece in 2011. See, people think that we black folks don't read and that clearly we don't remember. Booker Hodges wrote a piece, and he talked about that this was in 2011, so he was saying since 1982-83, $20 million has been poured into North Minneapolis, and where the heck is the money? And Booker at that time, if we remember correctly, was the outgoing president of the NAACP. they never forgave him for raising that question. But Mr. Flowers, appreciate you giving us the time and calling in. We got a couple more calls holding, and we'll certainly be talking with you again.
Okay, well, I want to thank you and Don, Mr. Edwards, for everything y'all continue to do to get this information out to our people, and I know we're going to have a great year in 2020.
That's right, and, yep. And likewise. All right, thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right, thank y'all. Thank y'all.
All right. Mr. Allen, do we have any calls holding? Because an interesting dialogue has come this way in this morning's program. A lot of questions need to be answered by important officials. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
This is Mr. M. Mr. M, you're live on the air with the Ron and Don Show. What's your question, sir? Or comment,
well, thank
sir?
You, gentlemen. Good morning. I mean, this has been just a very, very emotional week in a lot of ways, especially right here in our great, as a gentleman called, our great Shangri-La, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Boy, I happen to watch the press conference, and boy, you know, I have just the utmost respect for, you know, Mr. Moss, Mr. Flowers, everyone that's trying to, turn this corner. I mean, I saw the mayor and his nervousness, but I will say this, he was there. And if he continues to be there, maybe at some point he'll really start to listen and really start to understand the depth of the problems that are in the Twin Cities area. Mr. Edwards, a while back in the program, you mentioned some of the, as you always do as the historian, some of the positive things that we had in our community. We had a credit union. We had people you
That's
could
right.
go to. When I was a kid, if you needed a job, you go see Aspie Gaskins, or you could go to the Urban League.
There you go, my friend.
Out.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
You could walk out with an interview. Okay, you could walk out with two places to go apply. If you needed insurance, you could call Mr. Ted Allen. If you needed a house, you wanted to get housing, you could go to Mr. Johnny Mackay. You could
Hobart Mitchell Senior.
Also,
yeah.
And so that's what we really need. The reason that they continue to throw this money is to say that they've done it, but they know we don't have a plan. Once we have a plan, for example, there was a great after-school program at Sebethany for many years, Bethany Community Center, run by Mr. Bobby Lay. And all of a sudden, no funding for it, and it's gone. I mean, how necessary? I mean, he was teaching kids in there to play chess. Everybody can't be an athlete, okay? And everybody doesn't want to be an athlete.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm, but there's a whole myriad of things that we can do, and as you also mentioned, the book, The Scott Collection, that has the
Yes, I knew Mr. Scott and Smitty Norton. Those were two African-American men, but we're talking now 1960s. I mean, they really put together a collection of information and et cetera. So I know you made reference every once in a while to The Scott Collection. I have all the books, by the way, of the Scott Collection. But go ahead, sir. I cut in.
Well, just on that vein, I know there's a new book coming out by the Scott family, Minnesota's Black Community, the 21st Century. And we hope to keep that idea that we can participate in anything in life, we can participate, but we need a plan. We need to, when we go to these things, you know, it's so hard because I've been to many meetings like the last, and we have such a beef. We have such a long-standing issue with the powers that be and the way they have treated us over history and currently. But we need to regroup ourselves and come up with definite plans for our kids. You know, there was a gentleman last week that called in about Central High School and the demise of Central High School.
Yes.
And how that has just put a pit in South Minneapolis. When you look at, and Don Allen mentioned last week too, he's a graduate of Central, that
yes.
You had Joyce Jackson. You had people there that were guiding you, working with your families to get you to a better place. And we need to kind of regroup ourselves from what I'm seeing. I'm on the outside looking in now. But in listening to, you know, we're outraged, and now maybe that finally we've reached a point where we're saying, okay, this is it. You know, this young lady being treated like that, I mean, this is pathetic. I mean, we should have reached a point now, and I think Mr. Flowers really, I mean, he's so emotional about it, and I just applaud his efforts. You know, he goes down there. He faces these folks to really say, look, this has got to stop. But we need a plan, and I'm hoping we can somehow out of this get together and regroup and have a plan that we want for our people and to improve. Actually, if we do that, it improves the whole city.
Absolutely. Let me say this at this time, because I'm going to have to ask a question to my colleague. Mr. Allen, are we going an hour or an hour and a half?
We have an hour. We have four more minutes, and we have two more callers.
All right. Let me do this at this time, and thank you, Em. I want to also send our condolences as pertains to the death, the violent death of Monique, but I want to send my condolences to two members of her family, two of her uncles, who are in law enforcement. There's been confusion out here from some people that don't know what they're talking about. But she had two uncles who, one works for the Transit Authority Police, been with them for quite some time. The other one, Detective Williams, is with the New Hope Police Department. In fact, for a long time has been the only African-American there. And so her family had strong ties to the law enforcement community. And I thank you for allowing that expression to be made, Em, because people need to know that this young lady was of tremendous value to our community. And based on what has happened and et cetera, we've lost another jewel. Appreciate it, Mr. M, and we're going to have to be wrapping it up. We're down to 2 minutes. Thank you, sir. Mr. Allen, you want to bring us on in? I need to hear, given the pain of our community, I need to hear James Brown. Yeah.
We're going to put him there, but we have one more caller I'd like to get to real quick. We have 2 minutes. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to call to give my condolences to the family, to Monique Ball's family. And I wanted to say that she does have children, that we have to be a model community to make sure that we stand up and support her children as well as her family. I also want to speak on behalf of the video and our community leaders. We do have, from one generation to the next, we want to make sure that we have a proper way to pass on leadership from one generation to the next. And that speaks on how we are to come together and unite. We have a lot of issues coming in our community that's been here for a while, and we need people to stand up, and we need to stop talking about this money. We have more than the city of Minneapolis that can come and fund us, and we can also come out of our own pocket to support our community. So we need to change. It's 2020. We need to change our leadership today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. With 1 minute left, thank you for listening to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. Any final comments, Mr. Edwards?
No, just want James Brown to bring us home. And by the way, many of the things that people are trying to talk about as if it's never happened before, it's been going on for a long time. But, hey, we look forward to those that want to do the work. All right, bring us home, James Brown, bring us home.
To do things for ourselves, we're tired of beating our head against the wall and working for someone else.